Good to see everyone here, and thanks, Jared. I know what it's like. You forget the words. When you're preaching, there's a real big advantage that you have when you forget the words that you don't have as a song leader. As a song leader, chances are everybody else knows what they are. Up here, you can just kind of make it up as you go, and hopefully it makes some sense. And that's what I'm looking for this lesson. As we get into it, we look at a world that really can confuse us. If you're like me, stuff comes at you that just seems to make no sense. If you haven't experienced, just watch the news and try to make sense of it. Really difficult to do. There's a case in Cleveland. A policeman was acquitted of charges. This police shooting, all this big police chase and everything happens because somebody's car backfires. And it's like, how do we get from a backfire to hundreds of shots being fired and two people dead? I don't know. If you follow politics, if you can make sense of that, let me know. It just doesn't seem to follow. But there's one thing about God's people. We have a constancy in really to be faithful through a life in a world that's totally confusing. We have an opportunity, I think, to make some sense of it, certainly in a godly way, and to live no matter what around us. Certainly the early Christians did. They went from even starting not knowing who Jesus was, looking for him, to a people who were persecuted. And ideally, for the folks who were persecuted, wanted to persecute them to extinction, but they lived. They survived and they passed their faith on. The psalmist, David, the beginning of Psalms, this is Psalm 1, verse 1, he says, "Happy are they who do not follow the advice of the wicked and who do not stand in the path of sinners, who do not sit in the seat of mockers." We've got a lot of mockers nowadays. If all you have to do is watch, and I work a lot at home now, so every now and then I'll bop out and TV's on, and sometimes some of these talk shows, and you hear nothing but mockers, mocking the Lord, mocking goodness, mocking good people. We're happy because we don't follow that way. We don't listen to it. We don't get near it. But our pleasure, it says, their pleasure is in the law of Yahweh, on which they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by brooks of water, which bear fruit in their season, whose leaves are evergreen. They have success in whatever they do. So we as a people, to maintain our faithfulness, we are rooted and grounded. We're like trees planted by brooks of water. We know water is really important and we can take root. If you've ever driven west on, it starts out with I-40 and I think it ends that way. You go through desert, you go through New Mexico, you go through Arizona. Nothing but dry, rocky desert. And then you see green, and you think, wow, how'd I get to California and the coast so fast? Wrong. The green is the Colorado Valley. There's this little strip of water that's the Colorado River. Trees are able to grow in the middle of that desert because of the water that runs through there. They get their trees, they stand, they live for a long time. That's what we are like Christians. We find the water. Our water, of course, is the living water of Jesus, and we plant ourselves in that, and we bear fruit in season. A lesson from here as we deal with this is things happen in season. It's not always a time to do everything. We're not going to bear fruit. We may be frustrated, say, in our ministry, in our service to God, in our service to others from time to time. We may be frustrated as we go about trying to make sense of life or waiting for life to come to us. But remember, God promises He'll let us bear root. He'll nourish us, and then in season we'll bear fruit. But we'll be evergreen. We will be God's people. We will shine and have success in whatever we do. How you interpret that really has a lot to do more of you than what the Word says. Because oftentimes we interpret in material success. I'm going to be successful. I want to launch a business. I want to make an investment. I want to get a raise. Not necessarily what the psalmist is talking about. Success in whatever we do. Oftentimes, we're just trying to make it through a day. We're trying to withstand a temptation. We're trying to face a new thing in our life we're not used to, we haven't dealt with before. We'll have success in the Lord. Because one given in our life is change. Living is changing. Change happens all around us. Think of, I don't know, my mother was born in 1919. She died about 8 years ago. But the changes she had, end of World War I, go through a depression. Her family came from Italy, okay, so they didn't even know the language. So talk about change and strangers in a strange land. You start out with there, grow up in a depression, a time of really deprivation, into a war that was so big that we can't even imagine how large it is. Typically, I know at the Battle of Iwo Jima, 3,000 people were killed on the first day. Now, modern warfare, not that many people typically are killed in the whole war. 3,000 people on one small island in one small day, and that was only part of the war. The devastation. Then you had the atomic bomb. Guess what? The whole world can go. Then they had the hydrogen bomb. Atomic bombs were limited in how destructive they could be. A hydrogen bomb knows no limits to its destruction. I was watching a documentary on the guys who invented it. It was incredible. It even scared them because they figured, oh, how much can happen? A blast beyond what they can figure. So again, change. We lived in a generation or two, grew up with the fact that any day we could all be gone. Technology's changed our lives. We can send an email from here. You know, if you've got your iPhone or iPad or whatever, you can send an email to India that'll probably be opened in 5 minutes by the time it gets there. We can talk to one another. We're no longer strangers with people in other lands. But there's more social and political and technical change happening around us. Our challenge as God's people are to keep our priorities straight. Know what's meaningful, what's significant through all these changes. And they come at us. We can take the bait in a million different ways. But when change comes at us, what does it mean? As people, we're meaning-making machines. We make meaning of everything. This is why when Jesus told us not to judge, well, that's a different kind of meaning. They were judging in a sense of what's godly. They were judging and evaluating as gods because they made meaning. Think of the wrong meaning that was made of Christ. Pilate saw him as a revolutionary. Many of the Jewish leaders, particularly religious leaders, saw him as a threat to their power. Other folks didn't even pay attention to him. We all make meaning out of the same thing. We take information, decide, is it good or bad? Is it useful or is it trivial? Does it mean anything to me? Do I like it? Do I not like it? That can be with people. That can be with anything. What's right? What's holy? What's a blessing or what's a curse? All of these things are a challenge to us. And our ability to make godly meaning, that helps nourish and becomes our root in this world. Because if we can take any situation and make a meaning out of it, we will be shaken but never uprooted, toppled or broken in the Lord. Key to this, one of the keys in scriptures is wisdom. We don't hear much about wisdom today. Anyone remember the last time you heard anyone talk about wisdom? You know, wisdom's a good thing, people are wise. You don't hear it, let alone being cultivated. So wisdom's kind of out of fashion. Back in ancient Hebrew times, New Testament times, wisdom was valued, not just by the ancient Hebrews, but by other societies. Because it wasn't just about knowledge. We put a lot of stuff on knowledge now. You know, you know this, know that, get this degree, get that certification. You must be good. I had a boss once, I'll call him Dr. Bob. If you read Dr. Bob's resume, he had two masters, a PhD. He worked for the Secretary of Health and Human Services, did this and that. Dr. Bob wasn't much of a boss. If you didn't want to talk to him, best thing you could do is get him mad. He once went 9 months without talking to somebody who just got him mad. So all that knowledge that Dr. Bob had didn't make him much of a leader, didn't make him much of a supervisor. He lacked wisdom, the ability to apply that knowledge, to apply your experience to live nobly, righteously, and skillfully. It was so valuable that even in the ancient East and the ancient West, there were wisdom cults, people who literally worshipped with him. Sophia, the Old Testament word for knowledge, was thought by many to be a feminine form of God. So important was wisdom. Now, we can call things wise, and they're not. We have a cat that we named Sophie after that. Sophie's not too with it. But the point is, God's wisdom is. God's wisdom follows through with us. Proverbs 23:23 said, buy the truth, do not sell it. Search for instruction, search for understanding, search for wisdom. That skill at meaning making and living it out in your life in a godly way. And this is ongoing. We are living. It's a dynamic process. There's no going back. The preacher in Ecclesiastes said, do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it's not wise to ask such questions. We can't live in the past. And that's part of wisdom, too. We can never go backward to what was. This is not wise to ask. Go forward. So as you think about now, even as you think about the future, what's the biggest challenge in your life? What's the biggest opportunity that you have? Maybe the biggest temptation. All of us are going to have at least those three. Things tempt us. Things challenge us. But there's opportunities, big and small, personal, business-wise, name it. What might have you puzzled? What shakes your faith? When you see it, what really shakes your faith? Makes you wonder, God, where are you? What strengthens your faith? And even what causes your heart to rejoice and what causes your heart to be bitter? Unless you say, I'll never be bitter, and a lot of folks won't admit to it, many godly people can turn to bitterness. We looked at the book of Ruth this morning in class. Naomi left a godly woman, but she was embittered by her experience because they had to leave to Moab because there was a famine. She lost her husband. She lost her two sons, had nothing when she went back to Israel. She's a bitter woman, but she looked to God for her blessings and received them, of course. But all these things, what meaning do you make of something? And that's your power. What's important, significant, because all these things, your values, beliefs, help you decide, help you be in a world. In wisdom, godly wisdom, as we learn it, as we understand it, as we apply it, is the key to a pure heart and an understanding heart. So that we can be, as Jesus told us, wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Now, as we go through the rest of this lesson, it's going to evoke a lot of things in your mind. You're going to think, well, why didn't he say that? Why didn't he say that? And it's good. A lot of things in scriptures. Because wisdom is throughout God's word. We're going to focus on Ecclesiastes. Not go through the whole thing, of course. It's not time. But just some things to pull out about change and how we deal with it. Now, Ecclesiastes, there's two different levels of thought on when it was written. Some folks believe Solomon wrote it. And if you read Ecclesiastes like that, you think, here's Israel at its peak. Israel never got better as a nation. They were rich. They were safe. All their enemies were at bay. So things were great. And as you realize, Solomon talks about materialism, and he goes on, he says, you know, it's all meaningless without God. Others, and this comes from the language in it, the Hebrew that was used in it, believes it was probably like 500 to 300 BC, because it was fairly modern Hebrew. That would have been after the exile. This would have been a people who returned from Babylon, shattered, nearly destroyed, strangers in their own land, trying to find meaning. How do we live as God's people? So no matter how you read this, there's a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of wisdom, a wealth of godliness in Ecclesiastes. So we start out, change is a given. And you know this, chapter 3 starts. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. Everything has its time. We fight this. Even think in our popular culture. If you take like Nike and sports drinks, just do it. You can do anything you want. No, the preacher, God tells us there's a time to search and a time to give up. You can't do everything. But yet we become slaves to the good stuff. We expect good stuff. If you read through history, how many people have established religious utopias? Everything's going to be good here. We're all going to get along. There's going to be plenty, and they all fail because they really want to insulate themselves from the change and from the time of God. And even from the things that we curse and deny, the bad, and we do that, as if we're going to contend with God. God, why did you do this? What's wrong with you? We can't contend with God, and there's a time for all the things that come at us. The preacher writes, chapter 7, verse 13, says, consider what God's done. Who can straighten what he's made crooked? When times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider this. God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, no one can discover anything about the future. In other words, accept change. Accept what comes at you. Be happy when times are good. Realize that the bad comes about and God is still in control of time. There's more than the present. God can redeem it. God can make it right in time. But you choose what you want to do with your own circumstances. We've all dealt at some time with loss, with sorrow, many things. And some of us may even deal with some things about, you know, not being good enough, not being worthy along this. What we get from God's what we choose. Jesus said in Matthew 6, beginning with verse 24, he says, no one can serve two masters, for either he'll hate one and love the other, or he'll hold to one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. Therefore, I say to you, do not worry about what you will eat or drink or what you'll wear. Isn't life more important than food and the body more important than clothing? That's a big thing in our society. A lot of folks get it down to that's all life is. It's the stuff. It's the food. It's the clothing. If you have that, life's good. Not in the godly world. It's not. He says, look at the birds. They neither sow nor reap, nor gather into barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value? This is the key to our making meaning of the world. We are valuable, intrinsically valuable, given by God. So as we learn to love others as self, remember that God loves us, God values us. Now, it sounds kind of squishy because we talk about self-esteem and all this, but it's important to not only accept ourselves as God does. You know, we think just as I am, and that's true, but to love ourselves, to embrace ourselves as we are, with our faults, with our strengths, with our challenges, with our weaknesses, because, again, God has given that. In that, we find a wisdom to trust God. Why? Because when things turn south, when things turn bad, remember that God still values you. Trust God. He values you above all, and he loves you. Jesus went on to say, who by worrying can add a few inches to his height? Why are you so concerned about your clothing? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither labor nor spin, but I assure you that Solomon in all his splendor was not clothed like one of them. If God clothes today's grass, which disappears tomorrow, how much more will he clothe you, men of little faith? Don't worry asking what shall we drink or what shall we wear. All people seek these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But first seek God's kingdom and righteousness. All these things will be given to you. Don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will have its own cares. The evil of one day is enough for that day. So as we live our lives in the present, and it's easy to become overwhelmed by the present sometimes. Things seem horrible. You have a bad day at work. Even if you're driving on the interstate, the present, it's like, oh, this traffic's awful. Blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, some of us have little kids. Some of you have little kids that yells in the middle of the night for about the fifth night straight. You haven't slept well in months. It's easy to get hooked in the present. But again, remember, don't worry. God will sustain you. God will carry you through with this if you trust in him and if you learn to look at the world through the eyes of God. Wisdom is a way to do this. Look in the present right now. That's what we're content with. That's what we have. Let God define who we are, what we do, who we serve. And that's what Jesus said in that passage. You can't serve God. You can't serve money. In other words, you have to focus on God. That single-minded faith that James talked about at the beginning of the letter. Focus on that. Then things come clear. Until we focus, it's like if anybody really need glasses really badly. Or a couple years ago, I had cataracts. Anyone in here had cataracts removed? Awful thing. Yeah, you can't see. You think you can. I mean, they get worse and worse over years. But it comes down to, you know, you go out driving at night. What road? Where are things? You can go blind easily. You can't. God gives us vision. He gives us sight. It's like taking away the blindness, taking away the cataracts. Lets us make sense of a world. This is designed by Satan to not make sense for us. So in Ecclesiastes, the preacher seeks everything. He looks for meaning. When we say meaning, his highest identity. This is the meaning of life. This is what you pursue. He looked at selfishness, accumulation of wealth. In other words, getting the most toys, getting the most stuff. False worship, wealth, materialism. In other words, stuff is all there is. Let me worship stuff. Let me go at it. That's going to define me. Look at defiance. You know, being the rebel. Anyone ever run into folks who are the career rebel? Yeah, they'll defy it. If you say, well, that's not a good one because if I go left, it's right for you. Up. If you say up, down. They'll argue about anything. Trying to be right. Trying to find that one bit of truth and be profound. But it's not in defiance. It's not in being wicked. It's not an injustice. If we look at our society, we're riddled with injustice of all sorts. Don't dwell in injustice. People make their fortunes. They get advantage of people unjustly. But that's not the way to do it. Don't build up your strength, be it politically, physically. It's not who you are. You're more. Don't indulge in pleasure. You're more than that. Or even in education. You're more than your degrees. It's wisdom. Because if you do that, if you think, if I only, and when you get it, you know, if I only get a PhD, if I only make $1 million, If I only have a house this big, I've arrived. And what happens when that happens? You look around. Is that all there is? Somehow or another, that worldly attainment is empty. You just want more and more and more. As the preacher said in various translations, it's empty, it's vain, it's meaningless. And there's worse news as we pursue wisdom. It gets even darker. If you pursue wisdom, even that, wisdom alone, can be vain. The preacher says, chapter 2, verse 12, I turn my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than he's already done? I saw wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fools walk in darkness. Sounds great. If I have wisdom, the world is enlightened. But then he goes on, but I came to realize, same fate overtakes them both. I said to myself, the fate of the fool overtake me also. What do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless, for the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too much die. There's more than this life, because even if we attain wisdom in this life, I'm the wisest man on earth, sort of the guy on the mountaintop everybody comes to, and what do you think? If that's all there is, it's empty, because we all die, one and the same. And it gets even worse. Wisdom, that pursuit of wisdom, can bring us pain. It can bring us loneliness. Few people choose it. It's a lonely path to walk. Look, says the teacher, this is chapter 7, verse 27. This is what I discovered, adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things, while I was still searching but not finding. I found one upright man among 1,000, but not one upright woman among them all. This only I found, God created man upright, but they've gone in search of many schemes. In other words, there are very few people who are going to walk that path to wisdom, to godliness with you. It's why we come together as a people. It's why we have to stick together as a people, because we can't walk that path by ourselves. We can't do it alone. The only kin we have walking on that path is one another, to support and to encourage one another, because it's a hard road to walk. The preacher says in chapter 7, it says, a good name is better than fine perfume, the day of death better than the day of birth. It's better to go to a house of mourning than to a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart. In other words, we can put our head in the sand about the trials, the tribulations, the bad stuff that comes to other people, and just pretend like it's not there. It is. And it's coming to all of us. It's like, have you ever wondered how people get hit by a freight train? Happens all the time. Trains are big. They're loud. If you've ever stood near a train, the whole ground shakes. Yet people do. You know, that's the thing. There's an old thing, I don't know if people say it, whistling past the graveyard. It's like it never happens. The preacher is saying we have to embrace life to be wise. All of it. The good, the bad, the living, the dying. He goes on, he talks about frustrations better than laughter, because a sad face is a good for the heart. Why is that? As we deal with our frustrations, we become stronger people. You may have known people, you may have done it yourself. When we run from our frustrations, when we run from our trials, from the things that vex us, what do people do? They medicate themselves, drugs, alcohol, whatever, get involved in all sorts of stuff, withdraw from the world even. All of it because that problem's still there. But when we don't deal with that frustration of the world's not going my way, seek laughter for it. We deny ourselves a full measure of godliness. We deny ourselves wisdom. He says, the house of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of the fools is in the house of pleasure. In other words, we work. We take life as it comes to us. We deal with it. We struggle with it. But we struggle with God. And that's the difference that makes the difference. There's no easy answers. Wisdom tells us this. The preacher tells us this in Ecclesiastes. There's paradoxes. There's both ands, neither nors. He says in one place, and yet I declared that the dead who have already died are happier than the living who are still alive. But better than both is the one who's never been born, for he has not seen that is done under the sun. Yet, he says in another place, anyone who's among the living has hope. Even a live dog is worse than a dead lion. Stuff may not make sense. One or the other. We were talking in class a couple weeks ago. I think Nick brought it up. If you want checklists, there's no checklist to this life. There's no checklist to wisdom. It's dealing with the complexity, dealing with the frustration, standing rooted and grounded in God and experiencing that. the joys, the sorrows, the temptations, the blessings, all of this making sense, because the world out there, Satan's trying to confuse us, trying to trick us. We can put the world in a box, but when we do that, we put God in a box. It's what happens when we do checklists, when we decide this is how things ought to be. Well, they're not. We have to deal with things as they are. And as a result, we can't be wise. If all we stick to this and the confusion and the toys and the materialism, it's empty and meaningless. But wisdom, even with its struggles, even with its challenges and its pain and sometimes loneliness, when we pursue it, when we start to live it, starts to change us ever so slowly. Preacher says, chapter 8, who's like the wise? Who knows the explanation of things? A person's wisdom brightens their face and changes its hard appearance. So as we struggle, we get, oh, you know, in our face, our countenance goes. But when we start to pursue God's wisdom and take it in, for all its confusion and joy and wonder and temptation, our face starts to brighten. Because we can stand up to it. We can deal with it. We can deal with what comes at us. And as a result, we go from even that sour, puritanical whatever, or that bitter atheist, we can loosen up to where we can really get the wisdom of Ecclesiastes. And the answer sounds simple. A lot of answers sound simple. It's getting from here to there that make it a challenge. He starts out in chapter 2 early on. He says that, what do workers gain from their toil? I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. I know that there is no better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in their toil. This is the gift of God. So as we work, as we do good, it may not seem like much. It may not make us rich. But we start to find satisfaction when our eyes and our ears and our faces brightened by wisdom. We learn how to be satisfied with what we have, with what we've done. Sleep well at night. Enjoy life as it comes to us. That's the value of wisdom. So we're not worrying about what ought to be, what isn't. We can accept the blessings that God has, deal with it, and go on from there. Because the sum of the matter, and you're familiar at the end of Ecclesiastes, the preacher finishes, now all has been heard. Hear the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it's good or evil. In other words, the injustice he talked about, the emptiness, the materialism, the pursuits of that, God will take care of it. You, follow faithfully. Be wise. Take joy in what you have. Follow God. Learn his ways. There's your contentment. There's the highest, the goodness of people. New Testament carries it forward. The Hebrew writer wrote, don't be greedy, be content with what you have, for he himself has promised, I'll never leave you and I'll never forsake you. That allows us to stand rooted and grounded. God will never leave us, never forsake us. We may be fighting the worst battle of our life. God is there with us to strengthen us, to help us through it. Maybe to help us make sense in the end. Or maybe even just to help us rejoice that we have weathered the storm. We've weathered the temptation. We're stronger. We're more faithful. We're wiser. We are God's. Hebrew writer concludes, therefore, we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not be afraid. What can a man do to me? Powerful words, whatever comes at you, what can anyone do to me? God's on my side. So what's the fruit of wisdom as we begin to wrap up? First, we know it's manifest in Christ. Wisdom walking before us is Christ. When John started out talking about Jesus being the word is logos, which is also translated meaning. If you look for the meaning of life, it's Jesus. It's following him. If you look for the fruit of wisdom, again, James wrote about it. He says, the wisdom which is from above is first indeed pure. Again, seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness. Then it's peaceful to live at peace with yourself, to live at peace with others, to live at peace with circumstances around you, oftentimes that you have no control over, willing to yield. What's important, what's not? A lot of times we're not too willing to yield. You know, when stuff comes up, political arena is good for that. We're not going to compromise. We're not going to do anything. When you don't get your way in politics, people become more bitter and bitter. It happens in life. You got to know what to yield on, what's not important. what is important. Live life, continue from James, full of mercy, full of good fruits, impartial and sincere. The impartiality helps us to see things as they are, rather than, oh, I like you, so you must be right. I don't like you, so you must be wrong. We call it the halo effect at work. You know, if you ever worked with anyone, not much of a worker, but the boss really loves them, they can't do anything wrong. If you're a good employee and they don't like you, you can't do anything right. It's not wise. It's not godly, says James. Impartial, being sincere, because the fruit of righteousness is sown by peacemakers. That's us. As Jesus was our peacemaker between God, we become peacemaker with others. So the only thing Paul wrote in Romans, to God, being the only truly wise, may there be forever prayed through Jesus. Our role to each other is to encourage one another, to show wisdom, to even confess our faults, to be wiser, to help make sense of the world in a godly way, and to stay on course. Life can be burdensome, but if we cast our burden, as the preacher wrote under the sun, when Solomon wrote, or the writer Ecclesiastes wrote under the sun, he means earthly life, and seek God in his righteousness, life changes, we change. And as a result, the world changes around us. I'll finish with a few verses from Proverbs. Chapter 3, verse 13, it says, happy are they who find wisdom. Yes, they who get understanding. Her dividend is better than a dividend of silver. Her profit, more than a profit of gold. She's more precious than pearls, and nothing you desire is her equal. Length of days is at her right hand and her left hand, riches and honors. Her paths are paths of pleasantness and peace in all her ways. She is a tree of life to those who take hold of her. Happy are those who cleave to her. By wisdom, Yahweh founded the earth, and by understanding, he established the heavens. By his knowledge, the oceans break open and the clouds drop dew. My son, do not let them out of your sight. Guard sound wisdom and good judgment, for they will be life for your soul and adornments on your neck. Then you will walk safely and not stumble. When you sit down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be pleasant. You will not be afraid of sudden terror, nor the destruction that comes on the wicked. For Yahweh will be your confidence and your security. If there's any way that we can help you walk that walk of wisdom, walk that walk of faith today, a need you want to make known, we're here to help. We'll pray, do what we can. If you want to, come on forward as we stand and we sing together.